the ball regardless of the outcome, unless, right, a defensive score.
Right. Because that counts as a change of possession.
I still think that the nerds have not gotten the coaches to... There's no reason, in my opinion, in NFL overtime where you should kick.
Yeah, I think we're at that point now.
Like,
I'm just trying to think of any other like major changes that have been made. Like,
what about allowing zone defense in the NBA? It's kind of negligible, right? Neither here nor there.
That's kind of where I'm at on that. Like, I don't think it's made this crazy good or negative impact.
No. More times than not, it's like changing how the game gets officiated.
Right.
Which is not really a rule change.
Nothing good in the NHL I can think of.
Shootout instead of ties? Where are you on that?
I think they should change the scoring system. I think it should be a 3-2-1-1 type deal. Because
in regular, I guess here's where I am on regular season. I don't really
care in the regular season. My whole thing
really
is
upset me.
They've turned, they changed from the 5-on-5 overtime to the 3-on-3 to make it more exciting. And at the end of the day, now 3-on-3 is just as boring as the 5-on-5 was.
Well, like I think with baseball, I don't love it, but international rule or whatever it was when we were growing up, but the runner on second.
Oh, the ghost runner in extras.
I do also understand, you had 9 innings to decide it. Let's get it over with.
When you have 162 games in there.
We're not doing it in the playoffs.
Right.
I was going to say, the fact that we don't do it during the playoffs,
I don't really care one way or the other.
Same.
I will say, going back to college, we're going to have a day where the national championship is decided by a 2-point conversion off, and it's just going to be an absolute catastrophe.
Ugh, gross.
Like, they need to institute, like, if you want to do that stupid nonsense in the regular season, I don't agree with it, but okay. But now, like, come on, what are we doing? Can't have that in the playoff.
I think you're right that we're going to get one.
Oh, it's going to happen for sure.
No, it is so dumb. Like, because then everyone's like done with their 2-point. Like, it was fine. You had some people that were watching. It wasn't, like, I think that's the other thing. I think if the A&M LSU game doesn't also happen Thanksgiving weekend, I don't think they ever tweak it.
Ooh, that's a good take.
I think it's the fact that everybody was sitting at home. That was like the game that was on.
It was a Friday, wasn't it?
I think it was Friday. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. Mark Cuban, I guess, is lobbying to buy back the Mavericks. He's done an interview. Let's talk about that. We'll also get into more Final Four action when we come back during hour number 3. Stick around. You'll see Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim. Mark Cuban appeared on the Intersections podcast, an episode that published yesterday, and he had this big tagline. "I don't regret selling," Cuban said. "I regret who I sold to. I made a lot of mistakes in the process, and I'll leave it at that." According to ESPN's Tim McMahon, Cuban portrayed the deal as a partnership pairing his basketball expertise with the financial might and real estate savvy of the families who owned the Las Vegas Sands Corp and intended to build a new arena as part of a resort and entertainment district in Dallas. No other sources involved in the inner workings of the franchise sale support Cuban's claim that him continuing to make basketball operation decisions was part of the deal. There was no language in the contract regarding Cuban running basketball. Cuban soon became completely boxed out of the team's basketball operations, and he bit his tongue as Luka Doncic led a renovated Dallas roster to the 2024 NBA Finals after the sale was closed. However, Cuban was irate when Dumont approved the then-general manager Nico Harrison's stunning decision to trade Doncic to the Lakers in February of 2025. Cuban was blindsided by the deal, which is widely considered one of the worst trades in sports history. He received a call from Harrison informing him about the deal once it had been finalized. Harrison was fired in November when the Mavs had a 3-8 record and the trade acquisition Anthony Davis was sidelined by a calf strain amid relentless fan outrage. Cuban was among the people who lobbied Dumont behind the scenes to fire Harrison. Cuban believed at the time that he would have a prominent role in the Mavs basketball operations again, albeit not in decision-making capacity. Much to his disappointment, that has not been the case, sources said. All of this is, listen, Mark Cuban's going to be on his worst day more successful than I will ever be. You sold the team.
Yeah, like, what'd you expect? That's kind of the deal. Once you sell the team, that you don't get to make decisions.
Like, think about it in these terms. Even if you want to go, well, they told me that this was going to be the case. People will say anything to get a deal done. Is there a person on the planet with like decent business acumen to be like, hey, buddy, you are going to get cut out? I feel like, though, this is all going back to, it feels like he's trying to put together a investment group to buy the team back. But why would the Demonts do that?
Yeah, there's no reason. Unless they're going to get a massive return on their investment. But why? I mean, at this point, outside of just needing the cash, which most of these ownership groups don't at this point, why would you ever sell a professional sports franchise right now?
Are there whispers of who's going to own Vegas?
No. The belief is that LeBron will be involved in the ownership group. That's been a long rumor, but there's no real... I was listening to local radio the other day, and yeah, they didn't really have to... They didn't think that the owner of the Knights... I don't think they thought he would be involved fully. But yeah, there's no real big name that has emerged that would be the owner of the Vegas team.
I mean, you could maybe talk me into
selling the Mavericks to go buy the
correct
or the Vegas franchise. Okay, I could listen to it.
But I mean,
I would think for that, with the valuation of the new teams, he would need either a really big investment group or he would have to sell that remaining, 30% that he has?
He owns 27%, according to the story. The other issue is part of why the Lakers sold for the $10 billion valuation was the minority owner was buying out the family. So because he's trying to buy the controlling interest, he had to overpay. And they were only buying out. Like, if you notice, they kept using valuation. Like, that, no one stroked a check for $10 billion.
Right.
Like, he was buying out the remaining interest. But the person that did have to stroke a check for the Celtics, like, that, it went for $6.1 billion. But that's because one person had to, like, the reason why there's a $4 billion disparity between those two teams is because
someone's actually ponying up for one of them. And the other one, it's just
buying out the rest of the stake.
Yeah. Do we have anything on Seattle?
No. I mean, there was
the big one there to me is still the arena of it all.
Well, I mean, to Tim's point, like the whole reason, like the NHL kind of targeted markets that the NBA could potentially want, and they beat them to the punch.
Right.
They beat them to Vegas, and they beat them to Seattle.
Well, that's also because the NHL was willing to... With Vegas, they had to have a new arena because they just didn't have one. But with Seattle, they were willing to say, yeah, if you guys just freshen up... What was that? It used to be Key, and now it's Climate Pledge?
Yes, Key Arena, where I saw my first NBA game.
And they said, okay, cool, you spruce that up a little bit, and you get an ice installed. Hey, no problem. Cool, you guys want to move to Utah? We understand Delta's on the older side. But if you guys commit to some renovations, works for us.
It just feels like Cuban's like mad that he sold his team.
That's what I got from the story. I was like, he's just sour grapes.
Like, if you wanted to keep running your basketball team, like, don't sell it. That one. Then the other question, I was thinking about this. How much do we really care about where LeBron plays next year?
I mean, I think it's of decent interest.
Well, the thing that I think is...
I mean, well, I just don't know. Well, I guess the question is he going to take a cheap deal to go to, like, Cleveland, back to Cleveland? I don't know.
So Wendy,
like
Wendy,
the Lakers. Oh, go ahead.
Wendy asked the same question. How much money will he be expected to be paid? In talking to sources about what James might do, conversations often focused on how much money he would be willing to play for after two decades of making the maximum to choose to do it. According to Wendy, quote, will he play for the mid-level exception for the minimum, one scout has asked? A big part of this is knowing what he will be willing to do financially. That doesn't account for the possibility of returning to the Lakers, who will have James's bird rights and the ability to pay him to the max for next season. They are hoping to remake the roster around Luka Doncic, however, and must factor in Austin Reeves' upcoming free agency. If James chooses to go elsewhere, signing for the minimum will put him in play for any franchise and won't force any roster maneuvers to fit him into the salary cap. Signing for the full mid-level exception, roughly $15 million, or agreeing to a sign and trade could force teams to duck below the first luxury tax apron. I don't see any universe where LeBron signs for the minimum. I have a tough time believing also he's signing for the MLE.
I don't think he will.
I was mentioning this with Hasseltine.
I also don't think, though, I mean, I know he's 42.
I think he'll be 42 in December.
I just don't see him retiring.
No, I think that's the aspect is that I think
he's actually still pretty good.
I think everyone
thinks he was what he was, but
no, I agree. I think the question would be though, like, what does he actually care about right now? Because it seems to me a lot of it is making the record book so overwhelming that he's undeniable. Like, I realized the other day when they were trying to tout most field goals made. Did you have any idea who had that record?
No.
I mean, I think we could have probably gotten there. You
Malone?
Guessed. No, you guessed Kareem.
My guess was going to be Kareem.
But, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's a longevity stat.
Well, I'd be curious to know, on the list of Kareem's basketball accomplishments, does he ever think about most field goals made?
I'd guess no.
I would bet not. So, if it's all just kind of about padding the records, I mean, I guess the other question is if the Lakers are under new ownership, like, are they going to be accommodating to him?
Well, I think he's at the point where, I mean, so if you're, what's interesting about LeBron is, like, there's a bunch of franchises, I bet you, who'll be like, we'll pay you $50 million. Sell our arena out. Come on down.
No, I agree with you on that, but I
but
don't.
Like, if you're the Lakers and your objective is to compete, it doesn't make sense to pay him what he's getting paid right now. Even though he's productive, but he's not as clearly what he once was.
So the options Windhorse lays out are as follows. Lakers, Warriors.
Oh, don't do that.
Cavs, Knicks, Nuggets, and then the also Clippers.
Now, Wendy's obviously is usually as piped in as anybody on LeBron news. My guess would be this. It's either Lakers or Cavs. I can't. Maybe Knicks? Maybe.
I have a tough time on the Knicks. I can weirdly talk myself into the Warriors.
Because he's infatuated with playing with Steph.
Yeah.
And he kind of got that taste in the Olympics.
Well, there's also this.
And I would say this. If he went to Golden State, nobody's going to say he's ring chasing.
No.
The Lakers are better than Golden State.
Now,
so like,
to your Cavs point, though, it does kind of feel like a poor man's version of when he left the Heat to go to the Cavs. Like, if you look at it, it's like the roster's been made out to where he could be valuable to them, and that makes sense.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think if he goes back to Cleveland, because he left, it's, I mean, because he got him the title.
Yeah.
He left and they were like, yeah, we're good.
No, I mean, they gave
Thank you.
I mean, I took note that they gave him like a, they did like a LeBron night when he came back this year. I was like, that was kind of weird.
I'd be, if he went to Golden State, I'd be wildly curious to know the reception, not from Golden State fans, but because, you know, I mean, you know, LeBron, even though he says, oh, I don't care about anything. Of course he does.
He cares. Oh, he reads everything. Yeah,
of course. Like, how would that be perceived as like, oh, that's kind of cool. Steph and LeBron kind of running it out together. Or he can't go to Denver. Like, that can't happen. And like, him and Jokic playing together, they're, I mean, LeBron's just a lesser Jokic right now, isn't he? Like, Jokic, everything runs through Jokic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I do, I weirdly,
I mean,
think
he's smart enough to play with anybody, I think. And he's kind of figuring it out right now with Luka. Also, if he leaves the Lakers, do they cut Bronny 12 minutes after he decides to leave, or 15 minutes?
What are you talking about? I was reading stories this week about how this has just proven he belongs. Are the Lakers? No, he's been like, listen, in this league of I'm watching another 10 day get points, like, whatever. Like, my problem with is not drafting him. It was the insistence that it wasn't that. Like, it was. They drafted him because he was LeBron James's son. That's fine. So be it. Just stop telling me that, like, it was Ken Griffey and it was like senior and junior with the Griffeys. Like, stop making that the same thing. All right, let's take a break. We got Final Four. Let's talk through it, because I assume, Tim, you're just like me. You're in a pretzel when you look at the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about it. Let's talk through it next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, and then there were four. Saturday afternoon at Lucas Oil Stadium. We will start with Illinois and UConn. The line opened up 1.5 in favor of Illinois. I'm now seeing that it has jumped to 2 at most places. There's some 2.5s out there. The total has stayed pretty consistent at 139, 139.5. I think the first thing that comes to mind is, what do we make of line movement this early?
I think the belief is that Illinois is playing better defense than they were earlier in the year, and I think that is a more than fair assessment. You think back to the game when UConn played Illinois in, what was that, November? Early December, late November.
I wanted to say it was December, but let me double check for you.
Keaton Wagler didn't really.
I think he played like 15 minutes.
Yeah, he didn't really do much. And I think just from a power rating standpoint, the belief is that Illinois is.
He played 14 minutes.
Than UConn right now.
It was the last. Thursday of Thanksgiving, or it was Friday of Thanksgiving. It was Black Friday.
What is interesting to note? So the point spread is 2. KenPom power rates this at about a 5-point difference. And his projection is 74 to 70. Now, it's just a projection, and not every projection is going to be the same. But there is kind of a belief that Illinois is better. But UConn, based off of their history under Dan Hurley, I think they're getting a little extra respect in the market. I did talk to one odds maker on Sunday, and he said his true number was 1 in favor of Illinois. So I think there's some guys out there that thought the 1 was cheap, bet it up to 2, and that's kind of where we're hanging out now. My gut would tell me that UConn will be the public side for this game. I think this will be a spot where you're seeing UConn as a dog. Dan Hurley, 17-1 over his last 18 games, both straight up and against the spread in the NCAA tournament. History of having success in the NCAA tournament, or in the Final Four, I should say. And that would be my guess. I don't know if this comes down more. It might a little bit.
I think
that's why you have Illinois as a 2-point favorite when KenPom actually has it as 4.
So Wager Talk, which I feel like tends to skew sharper in their information rather than the old public shops, right now they're showing 54% of tickets, 57% of money on Illinois. I tend to think like you do, though. I mean, wasn't UConn one of the most public plays of the weekend last week?
Yeah, it was pretty big. And obviously it came home with the outright win. So yeah, UConn and St. John's were both pretty public plays over the weekend against Duke.
According to VSiN's March Mania, in the Final Four round, outright winning teams own a record of 39-7-2 against the spread since 2001. Although most recently, San Diego State did beat FAU in a 2023 clash without covering. You'll never guess which side I was on. Not going to really apply. Final Four number one seeds are 19-5 straight up, 14-9-1 against the spread since 2001. However, the 2-1s are matched up against each other.
I don't really know. So I have a future on Illinois. It's not a massive one, but it's 15-1 from earlier in the season. I think you could have got Illinois like 20 or 25-1 prior to the start of the dance. So it was not the best of the number that were out there. And I can't really decide what I want to do. I lean ever so slightly to Illinois. I don't feel confident. I'm not going to not hedge because I have such a strong conviction on Illinois. Betting against UConn right now just feels kind of dumb because of the success they've continued to have under Danny Hurley in this forum, if you will. But I really like the way Illinois is playing. I didn't know they had that in them in the Sweet 16 game. Like, they were going to get down and dirty, play ugly. I mean, they won 2 kind of ugly basketball games in Houston.
Yeah.
58 possessions, 55 possessions for those 2 games, and they won both of them. And I was like, I kind of learned something a little bit from Illinois. They feel like they're defending much better. Right now, their number has gone all the way up. They're 20th in the country in defensive efficiency per KenPom right now. So the defense is, in my eyes, continue to improve. And I think when you look at these 4 games in the dance, they've been pretty darn good defensively.
No, I felt like if you just watched the tournament, you would say that the 3 best teams are Arizona, Michigan, and Illinois.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair.
And yet,
but that said, you had a UConn team that couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat from 3 until late in the game. And you do have a couple of guys like Caravan and Mullins that are capable of lighting up from long range. So you do have that. And how does Terrace Reed play in this game? How do they defend Terrace Reed? Because he's can be just an absolute menace down low with his physicality.
Well, then, like, I also wonder, how much does, like, experience matter?
UConn's got it, right? I mean, Caravan's won multiple national titles. Hurley has been here before.
Solo played on the second title team.
Mm-hmm. So I do think there is something to be said, certainly, about experience in this heading in here and the build up to all of it. I mean, Underwood's never been in something like this.
No, I still don't know what to make of UConn. Like, I've used the joke that, like, they remind me of, like, Resurrection Stone UConn, where at times you can look and see the UConn that won 12 consecutive tournament games by double figures, but they don't consistently have it. And, like, do we have, like, a stat for what is, like, I'd like to see some info on the team that won the Elite Eight game to get to the Final Four that probably should have lost it. How does that team do in the next round? Because on one hand, where you can go like, all right, they don't deserve to be here, they'll get exposed. But then on the other hand, it's like sometimes like that's like team of destiny stuff.
Which one of these teams come Monday night do you think would have a puncher's chance against the winner of Michigan, Arizona?
Both.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think Illinois, with their personnel, I think can match up with these two teams. Now, Illinois played Michigan at home and got smashed in late February. So there is that. There is a data point to it, and Michigan or Illinois did not necessarily step up to the plate. I think they were favored in that game, too.
I'm nearly certain they were as well.
Yeah.
That was also one of those games that was a little closer, and then you got one of those Michigan barrages at the end.
Michigan was up 5 at halftime, and then, yeah, kind of just slowly was pulling away. Mo Johnson had a big game in it. I think if you made me pick today, I think I would go Illinois. I think that's just kind of where I was feeling. I think they're more talented.
It feels like every basketball answer says Illinois, but then it's like the emotional, like, are you really going to bet against Hurley?
Right.
All right, and then the next game, this has actually surprised me. So line opens as a pick.
Mm-hmm.
It's now out to Michigan, 1.5. There's some twos out there. I think if you would have told me this line was going to move, I would have thought it was going to move to Arizona.
You know, it's funny. Someone asked me on Sunday, hey, what's the line going to be? And I think I was like, Michigan 1? I mean,
do we factor in Indianapolis?
I don't think that's really a factor. I mean, I'm sure plenty of Arizona fans. I mean, Arizona hasn't been to the Final Four in 25 years. I'm sure plenty of Arizona fans are going to be inside Lucas Oil. But to your point, lots of Michigan fans will be there. Lots of Illinois fans. I mean, it's a really good Final Four from just a fan base standpoint heading to Indianapolis. I don't know how anyone honestly can say with strong conviction, I'm on Michigan, I'm on Arizona. I just think these two teams are so equally matched. And if Michigan gets out to an 8-0 lead, take Arizona. If Arizona gets out to an 8-0 lead, take Michigan. Like, you know, I think back to the Sweet 16 when Nebraska took a 12-2 lead over Iowa.
Yeah.
And Iowa was like a 7.5-point underdog. I'm like, this thing's coming back. Like, these two teams are too similar for this to be a rout. Like, if Illinois blew out UConn or UConn blew out Illinois, I think I could envision it. I don't know if I can really envision Michigan or Arizona winning in a blowout. Like, okay,
I have a tough time envisioning
late free throws.
Okay. I have a tough time envisioning UConn blowing out Illinois.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm trying to think, what's UConn's kind of worst loss?
The St. John. Do you count tourney
the
games?
St. John's. Oh yeah, the St. John's Big Ten tournament, or excuse me, Big East tournament. That was a blowout.
But do you count that? I'm not saying like, oh, it didn't happen, but I'm saying like that was the third game in 3 days. Like, how much of that applies? Beyond that, like their worst loss was
lost at home to Creighton. That was bad.
And they lost to Creighton. They lost to Marquette in Milwaukee. And then they lost to Arizona at home. And then the St. John's road game. I also wonder how much of UConn negative momentum was clouded by, in the last 6 days of basketball, we saw them lose to Marquette and then get blown out by St. John's. Like, I think that might have been a little bit of an overreaction.
Yeah.
I think on the other side, I would not bet it, but I could see a spot where Michigan gets out in front of Arizona and Arizona can't catch up.
I mean, we've seen, as we pointed out throughout the show, we've seen Michigan run away and hide from a number of opponents this year. I do think Arizona, though, is playing on just a absurd level right now.
Well, it's like what to do with conference tournament games. Like, what do we do with Michigan in the Big Ten final against Purdue?
Mm-hmm.
They kind of got pushed around a little bit. And then 2 weeks later, Arizona gets Purdue. I wouldn't even say got pushed around in the first half. It's just Purdue hit shots in the first half. They turned the water off in the second half and completely dominated them.
Yeah, because the crazy thing about the Purdue win over Michigan, to your point, is that they only hit 4 threes in that game.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a Fletcher Lawyer show. I mean, he hit 3 threes in the game, but it wasn't him.
It wasn't
going
the
nuclear.
Like, in the first half, I think, against Arizona, didn't Purdue hit like 7 threes?
Yeah. I was like, well, that's how you win this game. And then
they hit one the rest of the game.
I was going to say, did they even hit one in the second half? And then, I mean, not to make excuses for Michigan, but it's always that, like,
yeah, what do you make of a Sunday? Their seed was already done. Like, that game,
they knew they were the one in the Midwest. There was nothing to play for outside of just like pride of winning a Big Ten championship. Not saying that they weren't motivated, but there's a lot more motivation Saturday. That's for damn sure. And I think too, like, yeah, I know Howard was kind of hanging around and Howard covered, but it does sort of feel like Michigan's kind of getting back to zombie Michigan.
Well, I mean, also, I know it's not with the same team, but like, does it matter that Dusty May's been to a Final Four before?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, he led FAU there. He knows the deal. They didn't get blown out when they played San Diego State. It was a baseline jumper for the win.
Yeah,
I think, for me, and I've got this, like, competition that we do over at VSiN. We have to make two picks on these games, and I've got to, you know, I could do totals as well. I'm like, do I look under?
I'm thinking football stadium unders.
Yeah, I'm like, Illinois, Connecticut. They're both, neither team super up-tempo. Playing an under in Michigan, Arizona seems horrifying because those offenses are so good. But the defenses are both top five in the country. Like, that's the thing, too, about this Michigan-Arizona game is, like, Michigan's the number one defense in the country. Arizona's the number two defense in the country. So both these teams are really good from a defensive standpoint. But they're both pretty up-tempo teams. Michigan's 22nd nationally in tempo, and Arizona is 56. So not crazy breakneck pace, but still pretty brisk. And then you've got two pretty slow teams in Illinois and UConn. And it's funny because Illinois, these last two games, as we've alluded to, Actually, I think last three, I want to say, have been dead unders. I mean, they've held three straight opponents under 60 points. Illinois has.
Illinois also has shown an ability of whatever game you want to get into, they're fine with it.
And like I said, I didn't think that they were. I didn't think they could do the ugly game against Houston, against Iowa, and they did.
Yeah, I don't feel any better after talking this out.
No, I don't either. Nope.
My gut says Arizona and Illinois. And then I think, like, what if it's just, like, dumb brain? Like, what if the Big Ten is just better than everyone? Like, we spent all this time talking about the Big 12's the best conference, or the SEC is the deepest conference, and then we kind of, like, stopped talking about the Big Ten, and it's like, turns out they were pretty good when they go up against everyone else.
Speaking of dumb brain, what if it's Saturday comes around and UConn wins by 10? And it's like, yeah, you remember they did that in November? Yeah, they just did it again. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think there's kind of also the element of, like, what would make you feel dumbest? Would you feel dumber betting on Illinois and then getting hurled? Or would you feel dumber betting on Arizona and being like, why did I trust Tommy Lloyd?
Well, I think because I will be betting on Illinois, I'll probably feel dumber, especially if Hurley and them come out and win the game. And it's like, I bet against a guy who's covered 17 of 18 games in this event and has won two national championships. And I backed Brad Underwood. But as we continue to tie ourselves in the knots here, I also think UConn is a bit inflated because of UConn.
Well, then I think, like, when we get to a basketball, it's like, okay.
Who's the best player in Illinois, Michigan, talent-wise? Sorry, Illinois, UConn. It's Wagler, right?
I don't know what to make of Wagler. I've never seen somebody that's undeniably a very good player that puts up unbelievable numbers, yet do you ever feel like when you're watching them, like, the guy's undeniable on the floor?
I don't, I don't get the A-cuff vibe, right?
And again, maybe that's not, like, what they ask him to do. Like,
sure.
But I kind of look at it this way. It's like, all right, if you want to say in Michigan, Arizona, Lindenborg's the best guy, like, okay, fine. But don't we kind of run into a little bit of, like, Boston, Dallas, NBA Finals 2 years ago, where, like, aren't, like, the next, like, six best guys all in Arizona?
Let's see.
Like, Mara was not good over the weekend.
Yeah, Mara worries me in this matchup.
Like, my brain says the best, like, if you're talking about the guys that are going to play, Illinois got more guys that you would pick on the schoolyard first than UConn.
Yep.
And my gut says Arizona has a lot more than you'd pick than Michigan.
But then you've got Dusty May versus Tommy Lloyd.
And then on top of that, it's like, are you really going to bet against the team that just, like, filleted everybody all season? Like, ran away with the Big Ten?
Which is shown very well.
Exceptionally well.
Yeah, a team that just a month ago beat the living, I don't know, not beat the living breaks off, but beat Illinois pretty comfortably.
Well, and then, like, do you want to go real dumb brain? Are we really?
This should be a segment.
Should we really just say the Big Ten's just ready to win basketball titles?
Haven't won one in 25 years.
Of course, they do have three state football.
Like, what are the trends, right? Okay, Big Ten hasn't won one in 25 years. Arizona hasn't won one since 97, so...
And UConn hasn't won one in 12 months.
2 years.
24 months, whatever. They had to spend an entire season where they weren't the defending champion.
Tough year. It's a tough year. Tough year for the folks.
And they had the number one, the team that won the title on the ropes late.
Yeah, they should have beat them. Also, their women's team was a 28.5-point favorite in the Elite Eight.
Oh, it bumped up? I saw. I could have gotten it at 27.
Didn't cover though, chumps.
Yeah, this Hey, great teams win. Or good teams win, great teams cover.
Good job, Notre Dame. Good cover.
All right, my man. We will talk to you again next week.
All right, see you, brother.
That is Tim Murray of VSiN. We come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. J.J. Redick on the difference between the offensive efficiency between the second and third quarters last night says that the ball stopped rattling in and out, and it went in, and then implied that maybe the microchips in the basketballs are why the ball was going in and out.
Huh?
So the NBA, you know, they're using the tracking system.
Yeah.
So they microchipped the basketballs. He tried to, I think.
You mean like every league?
Yeah.
Kind of does?
Then he tried to make a reference. I think he was talking about The Sixth Man. He was talking about a movie where the ball starts to go in and out, but that's not a microchip. That was because a dead brother as a ghost was putting the ball in the hoop.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is this a Niners substation situation?
Nothing to see here. It's a nothing burger, as we referred to. So again, I guess the microchips are what's causing the basketball to go in and out. I think he was being facetious, but at the same time,
it's J.J. Redick. We can never take it.
We never, never can. I want to thank Tim for being with us, as well as Eric Hasseltine. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.